This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Right now, there's very little to poke holes at. I think we are a pretty remarkable organization that really believes in experimentation, really looking at the local context, really investing in people, not things. And we've had incredible success in 10 years.
What's a great way to lift up an impoverished population within a struggling city where utility bills can cost twice as much as rent itself? Local, engaged, clean energy efforts. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak to the Deputy Director of Push Buffalo, Rawa Gurmatsian, about the work that her organization is doing to create jobs and ramp up energy efficiency in the third poorest major city in the U.S. Gurmatsian tells us about how her organization got its start, how its model has evolved, and how Push Buffalo is trying to meet rising demands for its services in the face of looming EPA cuts. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by the Deputy Director of Push Buffalo, Rawa Gurmatsian. Rawa, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you for having me on your show.
So Push Buffalo, Push stands for People United for Sustainable Housing. What is the mission of your organization?
So Push Buffalo is a local membership-based organization that works in community development that's fighting to make affordable housing a reality on Buffalo's west side. Our mission is to mobilize residents to create a strong neighborhood with quality, affordable housing, to expand local hiring opportunities, and to advance economic justice in Buffalo.
And maybe you can give us an example of your work in action.
Sure. So Push really does a lot of things. We have a justice side, which means we organize. So we have a whole organizing department that has several different campaigns it runs. And so we also effectively work on policy, both at the state level and local level. But what I think sets Push Buffalo apart from other organizations is we take all of those organizing wins and translate them to community development and economic development opportunities in our 25-square-block area that we call Push's Green Development Zone, or GDZ. So the GDZ was founded in 2008, and it combines green affordable housing construction, community-based renewable energy projects, housing weatherization, green jobs training, green infrastructure, and vacant land restoration, all towards the goal of creating pathways to employment for neighborhood residents and reduce our carbon footprint.
And you came from Eritrea as a girl. Can you explain how your childhood as an immigrant to Buffalo informs your work now?
I actually was born in the middle of a civil war in Eritrea and came to Buffalo, New York by way of Sudan. And how it informs my work is that I was in the first wave of immigrants and refugees. So I've been in Buffalo for about 32 years, and I lived in this neighborhood for most of it. And what's interesting is about 15, 20 years ago, Buffalo became the second highest resettled city in America. Our immigrants and refugees come from all over the world. At the Grant Street Neighborhood Center, which is right here at Push's headquarters, where we run an after-school drop-in center for youth, I would say about 80 to 90% of our youth are immigrants, refugees, and about 40 different languages are spoken here. And if you go up and down, you know, Grant Street, you can hear up to 60 languages being spoken. And I think I think being an immigrant and refugee really does inform my work. First, I think that Push Buffalo is the kind of organization that is run by people that are of and from the community. They are dedicated to investing in leadership, especially for women and minorities. And so I think that being the deputy director really does help because of the neighborhood that we work in and the folks that we serve. But also, I think I have a pretty good understanding of what some of the challenges and barriers are for our recent Americans.
And why don't you explain some of the challenges you face as a city that's cold and relatively poor?
Yeah, so Buffalo, New York, in its heyday, you may know this, Alex, was the sixth largest economy in the country. But around 1970, we'd pretty much lost half of our population, half of our industry that was based on steel and the...
And your basketball team.
And the basketball team. I didn't even know anything about that, actually.
The Braves. Buffalo
I didn't know
Braves.
That Buffalo ever had...
They became the Los Angeles Clippers today. The San Diego Clippers, who were the Los Angeles Clippers, were the Buffalo Braves until things started going downhill. But I digress. Go on. Sorry.
Absolutely. And so what we have is we are the third poorest city behind, trailing behind Detroit and Cleveland. And so we have a lot of challenges there. We also have pretty high unemployment rates, especially within African-American and Latino populations. In the African-American community, we have about a 32.5% unemployment. But if you dig a little bit deeper, if you look at the employable African-American male population ages 18 to 64, an independent study showed that it's really 57%. When you look at the Latino community, it's about 27.5% unemployment. And a lot of the people that do work in Buffalo within the urban core in minority communities are actually considered the working poor. They work minimum wage jobs in the service industry. And so, in the area that we selected, the Green Development Zone, 12 years ago, it was one of the poorest communities in the country, where an average family of four, their annual income was somewhere between $10,000 and $12,000 a year.
And the cold weather in Buffalo must affect how you plan both short-term and long-term. Maybe you can speak towards that.
Yes. So in the short term, we are trying to help all of the homeowners or the people that are living in homes that, are architecturally beautiful and sound. Unfortunately, they were built before insulation. So you can imagine the utility prices of our homeowners and people and renters. Many of the homes have lead paint and high rates of asbestos. So these homes are making people sick and keeping them poor. So that is how we actually started running our Push Green program, which weatherizes people's homes. We've weatherized over 500 people's homes within the Buffalo community and helped about 1,000 homes get weatherized altogether. The reason why we got into affordable housing is because, most people pay more for their utility bill than they do for their rent. So we have about 84 apartments within the Green Development Zone, ranging in 1 to 4 bedrooms that is green and efficient, including a net zero house, which I don't know if you know what a net zero house is, but it nets zero, means that on an annualized basis, it consumes as much energy as it produces. And what's great about this little net zero house that we have, it's in a low-income community. We think it's the only one of its kind. Most net zeros that are being built are actually new homes. If you go, for example, to very progressive nations like Germany, every new home that they build is actually net zero now. But in Buffalo, New York, it's somewhat of a demonstration site. And so it was also a training house. We were able to train about 43 men and women from our neighborhood in building a net zero house using the latest green technology.
But that's kind of the shining example. What are, for example, how much do some of these needy or recipients of your work, how much does it take a chunk out of their utility bills usually?
Right. So I would say if you are, say, living in a two-bedroom house, especially before 2008, now the housing market is very quickly appreciating in Buffalo. We're the seventh fastest growing housing market in the country. If you would have told me 5 years ago we would be introducing inclusionary zoning policy at the Common Council, I would have told you you're crazy. We have other big challenges to worry about, not gentrification. That is very quickly becoming a big problem for us. So we have actually introduced inclusionary zoning policy at the city level. However, most of our folks, if they were living in a 2 to 3 bedroom house, which is pretty common here in Buffalo, they were paying about, a little over $500 a month to $600 and upward, sometimes $800 a month in utilities.
Wow.
Whereas they were probably paying about $450 to $550 a month in rent.
That's stunning.
Yes, it is stunning. So for that same 2 to 3 bedroom apartment in one of our housing, you're going to pay anywhere between $450 to $550 a month, but you're only going to be paying about $85 to $100 a month in utilities. So significant savings.
And what percentage would you estimate are from new energy solutions like solar panels, and what percent would be attributed to energy efficiency gains?
So for us in the homes that I just described, 100% of that is green efficiency work. Weatherization, you know, new hot water tanks that are more efficient, you know, appliances that are efficient. And we were just now getting into the solar market ourselves. So right now, besides our two training houses, which is the net zero house and the home next to it that has everything the net zero has except for the geothermal system, but has radiant heating, has solar.
What in the world ever became a Sweet Jane? She lost her sparkle, you know she isn't the same. Living on reds and vitamin C and cocaine. All her friends can say is ain't it a shame.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the Deputy Director of Push Buffalo, Rawa Gurmatsian. So Rawa, can you explain the model of Push Buffalo, how you came into existence, and speak to whether or not you think it's a model that's replicable?
So the Push Buffalo model is really built on principles and values. The first principle, I think, is we put people first. Everything we do is centered around the people in this community, about asking, doing deep level engagement, making sure we always know what it is that they want and what they need. So how Push Buffalo started was really, you know, our founders are Aaron Bartley, who still serves as our executive director, and Eric Walker. They came, moved back to Buffalo, both with really strong organizing roots, and started canvassing, or that's what we call, you know, door-to-door knocking, and started to ask residents, you know, what is it that you want? What could make this neighborhood better? How can we bring it back? And they were able to organize about 400 people. They applied for a Green for All fellowship, which was for $30,000. They won it, and that's what catalyzed all these community meetings and first, you know, sort of gave us the first amount of funding for Push Buffalo. They did an 18-month engagement process that came up with a pretty high-level community plan. This is high-level urban planning with everyday, you know, citizens. So we were able to really capitalize on the social capital of and community knowledge of the residents, and not look at them as just being poor people that were high need. And from that planning, really it's still the foundation of our work and still informs our work, is people wanted good quality affordable housing and they wanted good paying jobs. And so from that, we were able to start organizing. We first, and also there was one other theory, I'm sorry, I forgot to add that, is the concept or the value of community control of resources. And really the theory behind community control of resources is that if you own the land, you can experiment in it. You can do the kinds of interventions that people wanted to see, like good quality affordable housing, for example. But that really was a means of building community wealth for us. And so those are the principles that we started with. And, you know, we took a lot of those big organizing wins by taking National Fuel to court for misusing their conservation incentive program dollars or SIP funds to marketing the program, but not really weatherizing, you know, the low-income folks' homes, and turned that into economic development and community development dollars. So we helped to write the blueprint for the Green Jobs, Green New York legislation that passed, and we were able to launch a program called Push Green that now does weatherization and insulation. And just last year, we added solar to our portfolio.
And so can this blueprint be copied?
Yeah, so the idea of replicating push buffalo comes up a lot. We are happy to share, and show, because I think the outcomes in the green development zone are so incredibly tangible. We're able to show how the different systems connect. Why do we do green infrastructure work? Why do we do weatherization and insulation? Why do we do affordable housing? Why do we do training and employment and, you know, connection to full-time work? It's really not that crazy. When you come and see it and you can feel it and touch it. And so I don't like the word replication. I don't like the word replication because I think really what Push Buffalo is about is values and how do those values translate on the ground. So if we're centering around people and we look at what are the challenges and opportunities in this community, that's how we get to the wins. So I think that if we share the principles of what Push Buffalo is, those things can ultimately be replicated anywhere. And I think if it's followed, those are center around the people and the environment, do deep level engagement. And from that, I think, and then the idea of community control of resources and just transition principles will get you to really successful outcomes.
Now, the right wing likes to poke at failed green energy initiatives like Solyndra and put that up as an example of why government shouldn't invest in clean energy and that it should be up to market forces. What are the flaws in Push Buffalo's model that they could maybe poke at?
I think the thinking is flawed. I think that what we are seeing is that small and local is beautiful. That's how you build a local living economy. I think Solyndra failed because it was just too big. I think in any energy solutions and any climate solutions that the local context really matters. And that's why these solutions don't look the same everywhere. For example, you know, Buffalo is incredible in that we have 20% of the world's fresh water, so we need to really be water protectors. And what that means is we need to address our combined sewer overflow. The EPA has put us under a consent decree to address it. The Buffalo Sewer Authority is working on it. But where Push Buffalo comes in is, you know what, rather than just invest in great infrastructure, we think that we can open up a whole blue economy sector using green infrastructure, train men and women from, you know, underserved communities, under-resourced communities, as a way to build wealth, but also in helping to beautify the neighborhood, create things like urban farms, you know, cisterns, underground, above ground, monitoring, maintenance. Those are all the ways that I think we can open up a whole new job sector in a very depressed area in Buffalo that needs good jobs. I think that, Buffalo has as many sunny days as Fort Lauderdale, so we can harness the power of the sun. So solar is a very good option. So we've been fighting for policy around community net metering or shared solar. We're actually going to do our first demonstration project at a school building that we are renovating. It's going to have a green roof. It's going to have a community net or shared solar project on the roof. And it's going to have 30 affordable senior units. So that's how we're looking at it, is how comprehensive can we be and look at everything through a triple bottom lines approach. So I think that's where government should be investing in, is looking at the local context, looking at the frontline communities, the people that have the biggest challenges. How can we invest in those communities? And I think that will naturally begin to drive the economy locally. Local economies, the whole localism movement is really rooted around that. I think the idea of trying to have silver bullet approaches don't work. I think that, yes, you can maybe poke holes and push Buffalo's model. We've been around for a little over 10 years. Maybe it's not sustainable, but right now there's very little to poke holes at. I think we are a pretty remarkable organization that really believes in experimentation, really looking at the local context, really investing in people, not things. And we've had incredible success in 10 years. And so... And the other thing about when you think about the local context is, you know what, mistakes will be made. But if you start small, build them on really good theories, then you can pivot and make changes. But when you go really big, it becomes much more difficult to pivot and make, you know, necessary changes as they come in real time.
You mentioned the EPA consent decree, Rawa. Perhaps you can expand on that a little bit more, explain what it is for our listeners, and also speak to how the EPA's vulnerability under the new Trump administration will be affected by the work you do.
Yes, absolutely. Buffalo, New York is actually under an EPA consent decree to address its combined sewer overflow problem, or CSO. So this is something that very many older American cities are facing. This is not just our problem alone. It's many other problems, other cities facing it, Detroit, Cleveland, Flint. And so the EPA consent decree basically that was put on Buffalo was to help mitigate the raw sewage that's being pushed out into Buffalo's freshwater sources like the Buffalo River and Niagara River. And a little bit about the history of Buffalo is that we have a very, very toxic legacy. I think people always say, you know, the Cleveland River used to be on fire. Well, Buffalo's Buffalo River actually used to be on fire. And that's important because, you know, the Lake Erie, the Great Lakes make up 20% of the world's freshwater source. So that's a big, you know, job for us to protect that. And so the Lake Erie is connected to the Buffalo River, connected to the Niagara River that then connects to Lake Ontario. So the EPA has actually invested over $100 million over the last decade helping us clean up our toxic river that used to be on fire. So they have invested a tremendous amount of money. They continue to make even greater investments by putting Buffalo under a consent decree to address its CSO issue. So the Buffalo Sewer Authority initially, in their long-term control plan to the EPA, submitted really funding for $400 million over the next 10 years to do infrastructure upgrades at the water treatment sites to expand them or expand, you know, dig holes in the streets and either separate out the combined sewer overflow that takes the both all of our rainwater and snow melt-off water that goes into the drainage or sewer system and all the potable water from homes and businesses. And what we said is, hey, let's demonstrate for the city of Buffalo. There's an alternative method, which is called green infrastructure. So we took 25 of our vacant land that we owned, and we did demonstration sites that included living roofs, that included rain gardens, bioswales, permeable pavers, urban farms that have above ground and underground cisterns, and, basically gave a tour to the mayor and all of his staff in community planning and development and said, hey, here's an alternative. And so what we were able to do is out of that $400 million that they had written for great infrastructure, we were able to divert $90 million of that in the long-term control plan to go towards green infrastructure installations over the next 10 years. So we feel pretty poised that we are opening up a whole new job market for everyday citizens. Now our crew that works doing this work makes prevailing wage for most of the jobs, which is about $62 an hour for a foreman and $52 an hour for everyday laborers.
Come all you old-time cowboys and listen to my song. Please do not grow weary, I'll not detain you long. Concerning some wild cowboys who did agree to go spend the summer pleasant on the trail of the buffalo.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the Deputy Director of Push Buffalo, Rawa Gurmatsian. So Rawa, in terms of your funding, what percentage would you say is dependent on a healthy EPA?
So the help from the EPA has really just been about $250,000, and what that is doing is allowing us to train 10 people to do ecological stewardship or use green infrastructure as ways to clean up along freshwater lake waterways. And so when you look at all of the Great Lakes and how some of those urban core places like Detroit, places like Chicago, are really suffering and have high unemployment and high poverty issues, They can, you know, we have miles and miles of green infrastructure that can make investments in using green infrastructure to both, you know, address our local habitat, make sure that our water, our freshwater waterways are protected and they're clean. And again, put people that are living in these communities to work and making sure that they're part of the solution and not part of the problem.
And maybe you could speak about the big orange elephant in the room.
So, you know, for us, I think this administration certainly poses a problem because, you know, sometimes I think in the political arena, issues around even just saying climate change is a dirty word. And I think what I really can't impress upon people is this no longer can be a political issue. I mean, yes, we know it's a political issue and the political will needs to be there. But these issues around climate change, they don't need to be debated anymore. The reality is, this is not a problem that we're going to be facing in the future. These are problems that we're facing now. In Buffalo, New York, I can tell you for a fact that our winters don't look like Buffalo winters anymore. We've had some of the mildest winters that I've ever experienced in my 32 years living here. We have not had, you know, Lake Erie has not frozen over the past several years. And what we've seen are extreme weather events and weather disruptions that, you know, dump, you know, in less than 5 hours, 7 feet of snow, which is, you know, is causing people to die, be trapped in their homes, is causing, you know, roofs to collapse. And then, you know, and then, of course, we have really springy kind of Marches that causes a lot of our plants to come to life. And then we'll have another, you know, snow event in April and kills everything. So it's really having all kinds of impacts, both for residents, but also our ecology and the environment. And so I think that what I know for a fact is every city, every state has all the solutions it needs. We don't need another report. We don't need another, you know, book to come out and tell us how to do these things. I think that, you know, we know that the solar market is going to increase. Solar and storage is getting better and better. The technology is there. You know, when we think about Flint and Michigan and addressing our water infrastructure issues that has impacts on so many different states across the nation, you know, rather than pipe fit oil pipes or frack gas pipes, what we really should be doing is taking those same pipe fitters that are working in these unions that earn good work and having them fix our water infrastructure. There's billions and billions worth of dollars of investments and opportunities there. And really, I think that what this administration and everyone should know is that the fossil fuel industry, even in 1926, scientists knew that carbon was a problem. They knew that the Industrial Revolution really was supposed to be a bridge economy. You know, we've lived with it over the last 100 years. I think it's done, you know, it's caused devastations everywhere at this point. We know why our environment is being devastated. I think it's just time to sort of implement all the solutions we already have. So it's not time to stop or even debate or even just, you know, slowly think that we can implement these things. I think we just really sort of need to be on a superhighway of implementing in every city all of these renewable options, whether it's wind, whether it's solar, whether it's geothermal, and, you know, thinking about green infrastructure and upgrading our water infrastructure.
She's the deputy director of Push Buffalo, Rawa Gurmatsian. Rawa, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Alex, thank you so much for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Kelly Velo, The Grateful Dead, and Woody Guthrie. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.